The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
What's up, everybody? I'm Najee Adams.
And I'm Hunter Jacobs.
And you're listening to the Hoop Bowl Nets Podcast. We are back with another episode. Yeah, last episode we talked about Harden and the whole big three, and now they've got three games under their belt, and we can't wait to talk about all of them, especially tonight's game. We're recording after the double overtime loss to the Cavs, and you already know me and Hunter have some opinions on it, just like every other Nets fan out there does, so we can't wait to get to that. Make sure you subscribe to the Hoop Ball Nets podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star rating and review, because all reviews will get read on the podcast. You can follow us on Spotify as well. Download the pod, we appreciate it. You can also give the Twitter a follow at HoopBallNets. Like, low-key, we're getting close to 200 followers. Like, we just be getting follows out of nowhere. So, we're on the road to 200 right now. And I can't wait to get there. You can follow me at NajeeAdams_. Hunter is at Hunter_JKR on Twitter. And I got to get my own little plug in. Make sure you guys, if you rock with me, go listen to the Run It Up podcast, which is my own personal podcast. This week, I had Keith McPherson on of Talking Nets, a little crossover. You know, we talked about the Nets. We talked about tips for growing your brand, how he got started. It's a great episode. So go check that out. You can find it on my Twitter. You can find it on the Run It Up podcast Twitter. And yeah, go check out that episode. But before we get into things, let me give a huge shout out to our guys over at MyBookie. You already know MyBookie is one of our greatest supporters. Ever since we started the podcast, people have been asking us for betting tips. We always get asked, who you got, Lakers or Clippers, Rodgers or Mahomes? And I'll tell you what we tell them. Where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. That's why I tell people to bet with MyBookie. MyBookie's rep is rock solid, and they've got the best odds, contests, and promotions in the business. They're the only place I trust to handle my NBA-related bets. You know me, you know us, and you know that we don't give out our stamp of approval easily. To earn it, you've got to be the best at what you do, and MyBookie is the best sportsbook out there, period. It's simple. Sign up, enter promo code HOOPBALL, that's HOOPBALL, and get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. Head over to MyBookie if you want to add a little excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Bet with the best. Bet with my bookie. And so, boom, before we get into like the Nets versus Bucks and Nets versus Cavs, we want to talk about just kind of some Nets current events, some news, what's going on in Nets land. So we want to start with our old Net, our fallen soldier, Caris LeVert. It was revealed after he conducted the physical for the Harden trade that he does unfortunately have a mass on his kidney.
He actually said that this trade might have saved his life. Now, he doesn't know the exact seriousness of it because he's still undergoing tests. But the fact that it's one of those things that timing is just fortunate. Because it's happened in other sports too, where someone gets traded and then they find out that something is like wrong with them. And if they didn't get traded, they could have been in bad condition. It's the same case here, but we don't know how serious the mass is yet. But hopefully he's able to recover and return soon enough, better than ever. And also, it's interesting that the Pacers could have pulled back on the trade after his physical, but
yeah, I think they that
through with it. And Karis even said, like, he didn't know what was going on. He didn't know the next step or if the trade was going to go through. He said it's a testament to the organization, the Pacers, and not only how good of people they are, but how much they believe in him. And that was huge for him. He can't wait to get back healthy. So he's happy to be in Indy. And the fact they went through with it is either them believing that he can be a great player, all-star level, or they just really didn't want Oladipo anymore.
And that's why that was kind of obviously prayers up to Karis. We both over here at Hoopball Nets hope you get better extremely soon. We will never forget the contributions you gave to this Nets team. Always going to have a special place in our heart. But one of the more touching points for me was like you said, the Pacers could have backed out of the deal, which would have stopped the Nets from getting Harden, which is also interesting because like they're an Eastern Conference competitor, so they knew what they were doing, but they have that much faith in Karis. And it kind of reminds me of not exactly the same scenario, but back when the Pelicans traded for Brandon Ingram, I know that there was some speculation around him having blood clots and people not really knowing how he was going to bounce back, if he was going to be the same player, if he like, because that was before he kind of took that next step into the all-star caliber. So the Pelicans took the chance on Brandon Ingram, even with the blood clots, even with people saying that this is a very serious injury, the same. And Brandon Ingram obviously came back and delivered tenfold on the type of player he was before. So I think the Pacers got themselves a stud in Karis, and I think they know that, which is why they wanted to pull the trigger regardless. Also, like Hunter said, they wanted to get Victor Oladipo the heck up out of there, because the fact that they traded a fully healthy, functioning Victor Oladipo for Karis LeVert with a very mysterious injury speaks volumes in itself. But yeah, we wish Karis the best. We wish the Pacers the best with Karis. We think he's going to eat, and we hope he does eat. Moving on to a Brian Lewis quote that Hunter brought to my attention. So Brian Lewis, New York Post, you most certainly have heard of him before. He tweeted out today that Sean Marks said that KD was not behind the deal for James Harden, but was kept in the loop and up to speed on the trade. Now, this has caused a lot of, like, confusion. Yeah.
Because some people, by the way he worded it, believe that behind it, meaning as a support system, so they're thinking KD didn't support that trade. Which, at first, that's what I thought it was. But I think Marks meant that KD wasn't the mastermind of it, in a clarification saying that, like, this organization won't be like every team that LeBron's ever been on since he was 18 years old, where he can choose who he plays with all the time. It's not going to be like that. Marks is going to decide what they have to do to win, but he's also going to keep them in the loop. It's like, when LeBron wants a player, he was able to get the player by any means, and it's still like that. Now, in this case, KD can't just sit there and be like, get me Kawhi Leonard and he'll get him. It's not going to work like that, but he's going to keep him in the loop for players that they are trying to get his opinion on different stuff.
Yeah, and I just think that speaks to how Sean Marks wants to run the organization and, like, the integrity behind the way in which he runs it. I think you're 100% right in saying that, you know, it's not going to be like the way that LeBron runs his teams. And I personally don't have a problem with that. I'm all for the player empowerment. Like, if you want to play with, obviously you want to play with the best guys, but there's a way in which to go about it. And,
there's nothing wrong with what LeBron does, but he's just always been given that ability by every general manager of the teams he was on.
And so, yeah, I definitely think by Brian, like, what Brian meant was, like, he wasn't the mastermind, like Hunter said. I don't think some people took it as like he wasn't in favor of the trade, or like he was against the trade, which I definitely don't think was the case. Obviously, KD and Harden have a long-standing relationship, and even in the first two games without Kyrie, you could see that they were kind of clicking and rolling on all cylinders. So I definitely think he was all for trading for another all-star caliber player in James Harden. Speaking on Harden, he had some words on being back with Mike D'Antoni. Obviously, he spent a lot of his years in Houston being coached by Mike D'Antoni. He had this to say. He said, "Mike's an unbelievable coach. He's been doing it for a very long time. Obviously, Mike's a factor, being comfortable with him, comfortable with Kevin, knowing Kyrie made it easy for me. It was a no-brainer." That was how D'Antoni played into Harden joining the Nets. Obviously, you want to go somewhere where you're comfortable, where you know somewhat how you're going to be used in the offense. And obviously, the Nets are still figuring it out. But with Steve Nash,
on top of that, he's also played with KD. So it's not a completely new thing for him to not be the main scorer on the team. Like, in Houston, he was for all those years, but people forget that KD was the guy when he was in OKC all those years ago. So he knows how to take a backseat. Yeah, he's a different player, a better player. But like Harden said, it's a comfort thing. And being with D'Antoni and KD and winning should make him the happiest he's been in a long time.
And I think that D'Antoni's role, especially on a team with a first-year head coach in Steve Nash, is probably more prominent than it might have been in another organization. I think Steve Nash is still trying to figure it out, especially now with this whole big three. He's probably leaning on his assistant coaches a lot, and D'Antoni being the most notable of those. So, yeah.
One thing I saw, and this was a... Well, I'm going to ask you if it's the same thing as Golden State, basically. I saw that people on the NBA Network were talking about this team and saying that the Nets should – Isaiah Thomas was talking about it, saying that they shouldn't overcomplicate things and the defense will come – no, if the defense comes, the offense will follow is basically what he said. As their defense improves, their offense will always be there. So getting on the defensive side of things is what's important. But Nash basically reinforced that and said he doesn't want to overcomplicate things on offense with the three stars and just wants to see beautiful basketball. In that same way, Steve Kerr came in after Mark Jackson had a heavy enforcement of structure and let Steph Curry and Klay Thompson run wild with screens. And they turned into a powerhouse. So do you think Nash should follow that method of letting them run free without structure, or should he give them an offensive structure to follow? Like a 7 seconds, a not the triangle, it doesn't work, don't care.
I think there's a healthy balance in between that great coaches find a way to get there. Like, I think Steve Kerr, I think a lot of people, even with kind of like Tyronn Lue with that Cavs team, like people kind of take away from the job that the coach does. And by people, I mean like spectators, not the players in the team, but like national media, people watching the game of basketball kind of take away the credit from the coach just because they automatically assume, oh, that must be easy to coach LeBron and Kyrie. Like, of course you're going to win the chip when you have that. But like, keep in mind, Tyronn Lue ran a lot of sets for that team, that, which is why he's gotten another job. Like, there's things that good coaches do that might not be able to be seen by casual NBA fans, and not even just casuals, like even people on Twitter that study film might not be able to, you know, see the nuances of what a good, great coach can do. Same thing with Steve Kerr. I was one of those people that said, you know, like, Steve Kerr is not that good of a coach. I could sit there and let KD and Kyrie shoot up I mean, not KD and Kyrie, KD, Steph, Dre, and Klay shoot up 90 shots a game. And of course, you're going to win more than you lose. But like, I want to give my credit to Steve Kerr and say that, you know, there's probably things behind the scenes or even on the court that I didn't even notice what he was doing. And so
the screen sets that he was running to get Steph open was something most teams can't do, obviously, because they don't have a shooter at that level or somebody whose ball handling and overall offensive ability is at that level. That he used Steph's weapons to his advantage, something that wasn't there before he got there. And it was a noticeable difference, which it's going to be – it's whatever path Steve Nash wants to take, but he has to pick the right choice, because if he leaves them too free and it winds up with a bad balance of ugly ISO shots, then it's going to fall back on him.
No, I 100% agree, which is why I think he needs to find that healthy medium of somewhere in between letting them work and letting them get their moves off and go crazy, and, you know, but also reining that in when need be, running offensive sets, instilling some sort of discipline and offensive game plan in those three players, because, you know, all three of them are used to being like the alpha dog on their team. And so there's definitely going to be some growing pains, like we saw tonight with the Cavs, but we'll get into that. But before we do, I want to talk about Nick Claxton, because he's very sorely missed on this Nets team. Steve Nash had some words on Nick Claxton. He said that, "I think Nick is probably closer to the midseason break than he is to now, sometime in February for sure, but no setbacks, just working through it." So obviously, some good and some bad in that. The good being that Nick hasn't had any setbacks, so he's well on his way to recovery. The bad being that, you know, he's not that ready to come back, which obviously sucks. And it sucks even more now that the Nets traded for Harden, because they severely cramped the amount of depth that they had.
Do you think that Marks is taking this time to look at what their holes are with this team so he can pick the right free agents?
I think that he is. I think that the Nets have to, by NBA law, have to sign like two players by the end of this week or next week. So like, changes are coming, reinforcements are coming, but I definitely think that he's giving this like this adjustment period, he's using it as kind of like a stepping stone or like a lesson to see what the Nets need and what they're weak at, what they're strong at, you know, kind of evaluate what he should prioritize when looking at who to pick up. I obviously think that above all, they need a backup center. DeAndre Jordan ain't gonna cut it for 36 minutes a game. He's just not. But again, that was on display tonight against the Cavs. Against a team like the Bucks, not so much. But still, him playing over 30 minutes a game can't happen in the playoffs. Teams will pick that apart.
Based on what you've seen now, who do you think is the option at center that they need?
I feel like I said last time, Dwayne Dedmon is kind of who, and I don't know why no one has picked him up yet. I said this last time, but there's got to be something behind the scenes. Maybe he wants too much money, but like, I feel like he's definitely capable of being on an NBA roster. Like, he would be my pick, just because, like I said before, not only can he play some defense, rim protect, but he can also step out behind the perimeter and shoot the three, which the Nets have no bigs that are capable of shooting the three ball right now. So other than KD, I guess, if you count him as a big, but yeah, really, they have no bigs that can step outside of the paint and create any sort of offense. So Dwayne Dedmon would be my pick. Do you have a specific person in mind?
I mean, Dedmon makes the most sense because he can hit the three ball, so at least it gives some diversity from Jordan, who literally can't make a shot unless his hand is at the rim.
I know some people were saying Ersan Ilyasova.
Yeah, but he's more of a stretch four. If they think Claxton can come back and be the backup center, then sure. then go for it.
Another guy that is on my radar, he just got waived, Alex Len.
Yeah, Alex Len would be a good option, but I see, based on need, I'd say Deadman, because they can essentially run a five-out system with Deadman, where they can't. It's like if Jordan sets a pick, in all reality, they don't have to worry about him fading for a shot ever. All he can do is dunk. That's what you have to worry about. If you get a guy like Deadman, it causes the concern for a roll and a fade, because he can hit threes at a solid clip. So I'd say they can get Deadman or Ilyasova, but Deadman seems like the better option.
Yeah, I agree. And now we kind of want to dive into why we're saying this, which is their previous three games. We're more so just going to touch on the Bucks and the Cavs. The Magic game was, you know, whatever. But we'll touch on that more so when we talk about our general statements and thoughts on the Nets' past three games. But before we get into that, we got to give a huge shout out to our guys over at Manscaped, of course. Happy New Year's from our sponsors, Manscaped. Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-belt grooming, offering precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, and is here to help you have a clean, shaven ball sack in the new year. Ring in the new year with the right tools for the job. Happy 2021. Spoiler alert, hairy nuts are still gross. Step into the new year with a tree standing taller and shave your boys. Manscaped is here to give you a New Year's resolution that you'll actually want to keep. The Perfect Package 3.0 is the below the belt grooming package you need to start off strong this year. Come out of quarantine with clean balls thanks to the Lawnmower 3.0. This waterproof and skin safe trimmer will reduce nicks to your two best friends. The third generation trimmer even has a light to shine to the promised land 2021 looks to be. It's also time to freshen up down there in the new year. The Crop Preserver is the anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. You already put deodorants on your armpits. Why are you not putting deodorant on the smelliest part of your body? And for on-the-go freshness, you'll love the Crop Reviver Ball Toner Spray. Start this new year off with a fresh set of testes, thanks to Manscaped. They even threw in their shed travel bag to keep all your goodies stored comfortably. Speaking of comfort, the Manscaped anti-chafing boxer briefs are also included and will bring your underwear game to the next level. Bring sexy back in 2021. Get 20% off plus free shipping with code HOOPBALL20. That's no spaces, just HOOPBALL20 at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. While we're already kind of plugging things, just to get you guys excited, we are scheduled to have our first guests on the podcast soon. It's been like 2 years since me and Hunter have been doing this. We've yet to have a guest, but that changes. This Saturday, we are going to have Billy Reinhart of Nets Daily on the podcast. That episode will probably drop on Monday, so look forward to that. And then on Sunday, we're talking to Nets as depicted by SpongeBob. So if you're a Nets fan, you obviously know who he is. Even if you're not a Nets fan, he's a great Twitter follow, so go check him out. That podcast you can also look forward to. So yeah, just wanted to get you guys excited for that. And so yeah, the Nets versus the Bucks. This game was without Kyrie. The tone from Nets fans and Nets Twitter, if you looked at it after this game and you looked at it after tonight, it's a complete different vibe.
One thing I'll say is right out the gate of this game, you could tell that Harden was taking a backseat for the most part. For his first games with the Nets, he was trying not to shoot the ball as much and just get a feel for the other players on the roster. So he would bring the ball up and then either give it up to KD or find Joe Harris off a pick, and he's been getting double-digit assists almost every game now. And I think based on the game against the Cavs tonight, that he's going to wind up taking less shots than both Kyrie and KD.
And so you kind of saw in that first game with the Magic, he dropped a triple double. Things were great. Second game, he dropped 34 points against the Bucks. And then Kyrie came back and everyone kind of wondered who's going to be the Chris Bosh, you know, like who's going to be the Kevin Love, who was going to take the L. And, it ended up being Harden in this game versus the Cavs. And I think not only, so he was primarily serving as the point guard. Kyrie was playing a lot off ball in the game versus the Cavs. But I think Harden taking the back seat, maybe for psychological reasons, just because like he's the guy that wasn't a part of the Nets plan coming into the season. And so they traded all their depth to get you, and he probably feels like he's the guy that's thrown a wrench into things, and so he doesn't want to step on anyone's toes. He doesn't want to overestimate the amount of leverage or pull he has on the team, so he feels like he has to take the back seat.
I also think that he's okay with lessening his typical ridiculous stats if it leads to winning. I really think that winning is his focus at this point.
I mean, yeah, it has to be. He's seen how it works out when he's the primary scorer doing whatever he wants. And he did that for multiple years on the Rockets and to no avail. You know, like he ended up in the same place.
He would have made it 1 year had Chris Paul not gotten hurt. But that's still an if. But other than that, it hasn't really been a powerhouse where it's a guaranteed top of the West team when he's at the helm of the offense. But I mean, his vision is extremely good, better than Kyrie's probably, if we're being honest. So having him bringing the ball up, if he's willing to take a back seat, might be the best option for them to score the ball effectively.
No, I think that the way they're running it now is with a couple of tweaks probably is the way that they should continue to run it. Just looking at this Bucks game, it was incredible that the Nets even won. The Bucks shot 22 more shots. The Bucks were 46 of 106 and, from the field, and the Nets were 46 of 84. So they made the same amount of shots, and the Bucks took over 20 plus shots than the Nets.
Because the Nets turned the ball over 12 more times than the Bucks.
Yeah. And,
the Bucks also had 4 more offensive rebounds. That created 16 more opportunities right there alone.
The Nets had 17 turnovers compared to the Bucks 6. That like that, the fact that we even won this game is crazy. When you have more than double, almost triple the other team's turnovers, 9 times out of 10 you lose that game. But that just speaks to the talent. Well,
this game also proved the Nets' problem. Although the turnovers were huge, the Nets shot 55% from the field and 48 from three, right?
Yeah.
Their bench shot 5 of 14 and 1 of 5 from three.
I mean, their Nets are like, they're 6 deep right now. Like, they're legitimately 6 deep. They have KD, Jeff Green, who's really stepped up in a big way, Joe Harris, DeAndre Jordan, James Harden, Kyrie. And who else after that? There's like, they don't believe in Bruce Brown for some reason. I truly don't know why, but I personally think Bruce Brown should play way more than he does right now. He could not only he's a 3-and-D guy. He plays good defense. He actually tries on the defensive end, which is more than you can say for a lot of guys. And he's very capable of getting a bucket. So I don't know why Steve Nash has iced him out of the rotation, but whatever. Because Reggie Perry ain't cutting it. He's just not.
I saw a post that was talking about the Landry Shamet trade, right? Where at the time you think, wow, the Pistons are the team that really lost that so horribly. Like, how did they give up Luke Kennard and the Nets get Shamet for nothing for that pick? And the player selected with that pick has actually been pretty good.
Who?
Sadiq Bey.
Oh, okay.
The Pistons. A 6'7 forward averaging 9-4 in 20 minutes a game, shooting 42% from three. With decent defensive numbers. I've seen posts saying, like, that Nets might actually regret that trade because Bey fits what they need rather than Shamit, who's a Joe Harris light.
Yeah, it's tough because you already don't have any defense in this starting lineup outside of Jeff Green, maybe, like, and KD. KD obviously is capable of guarding anyone, but, and people don't really give him his flowers for that. Like, he locks up, but other than KD, who's really guarding anyone? Like I said, Jeff Green is kind of capable, but you got Kyrie.
Don't even speak of Kyrie's defense until we get to the next game.
You've got, fine. So even in the starting lineup they had versus the Bucks, you've got Joe Harris, DeAndre Jordan, Harden, Tim TLC, Landry Shamet. Not
those three in the starting lineup, who out of the 48 minutes, they played 37, 38, and 41. So they're almost on the court the whole game. And they can't guard anyone. DeAndre Jordan is a bottom 10 defender out of all starters in the NBA.
Yeah, I it's,
and I, like, there are times I exaggerate. I don't think that is.
I don't know
anyone. It's almost instantly a bucket.
I don't know that Landry Shamet, like, there's not many minutes for him, you know, like, when the Nets are at full strength, where do you slot him in? You're obviously getting KD, you're obviously getting Harden and Kyrie as many minutes as possible.
Game, Joe Harris played 37 and he played 11, which means he came in when Joe Harris came out. So they literally used him as Joe Harris light.
And that's like, that's barbecue chicken on the defensive end either way. So it's tough. And literally that
the problem of Duncan Robinson. And unfortunately, I love Joe Harris. Neither of them are Duncan Robinson.
I don't know about that one, but I think that Duncan Robinson is used in very different ways.
Has been.
I think he's used more prominently than Joe Harris is on the Nets.
Because between last year and this year, he's shooting identical percentages from the field and from three. He is the key point for consistency.
And fine, I'll give it to you. Yeah, I'll say that Duncan Robinson is better than Joe Harris, but I just think that they're used in very different ways, so Duncan Robinson gets way more credit than Joe Harris does for his shooting capability.
I do believe it's very close, but then you put Shamet into the mix and Shamet doesn't cut it.
Either of them. The good things about this game versus the Bucks, though, the fact that that just speaks to how talented of a team this is. The fact, and like how much upside that we had. The Bucks played everyone. This was their full strength team, and we didn't have our third best player, which would be the second best player on the Bucks. So, like, the fact that we still beat them.
I don't think the Bucks are nearly the scariest team in the East.
I don't think they are either. I think the Celtics are.
At full strength, both the Celtics and Sixers are scarier to the Nets than the Bucks are.
I'd agree. I just think that it's like the fact that we had triple their turnovers and weren't at full strength while they were at full strength and still won is crazy.
The only reason I put the Celtics there is because the Celtics hole is the same hole as the Nets, so they literally match up perfectly. Yeah. Tristan Thompson and DeAndre Jordan do essentially the same thing.
No, I 100% agree. Then
you have wings just going at it. Tatum and Brown. Yeah, they're not Harden and KD. Then you have Kemba. Then you have Smart. The defense on Boston is going to be there. The thing that keeps them in it. But then the Sixers, where Embiid right now is just going to expose DeAndre Jordan.
I mean, I think they're going to have a hard time guarding a lot of teams.
Well, yeah. In general, they will, because no matter, every team's best scorers are going to get theirs against the Nets, because if they have more than one score, KD can guard all of them.
And that brings us to the atrocity that was the Cavaliers game tonight. So the Nets ended up losing in double overtime. And it was supposed to be scary hours. Oh, my God. KD, well, Kyrie, Harden.
A side note before we get into specifics of this game. I was looking at the box score of the Bucks game, right? And do you believe that the Bucks losing George Hill for DJ Augustine is like a huge loss for them?
Losing George Hill and getting back DJ, I would. Well,
they signed Augustine after they gave Hill to the Thunder, and Augustine in the game against the Nets went 0 for 8 from the field for 2 points and 20 minutes without another stat in the box score. 0 rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, turnovers, nothing. He didn't do anything in 20 minutes except miss shots.
I think DJ Augustine was really good last season, and so I think he definitely upped his value when it comes to free agency this offseason. And I don't think it's that much of a net loss between him and George Hill, honestly, but I can see where the discrepancies come from. The Bucks definitely lost a little something, but I think overall as a team they got better. So like, I don't think they really give a damn that much, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say they got better. Bobby Portis has been okay, but I don't know. They just don't seem as scary this year as they were the last 2 years in the regular season.
No, I 100% agree. I don't really fear them that much, which is crazy because you would think that you would since they have Jrue Holiday, but like, I just don't. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, they're just not scary to me anymore. And I think they're going to go on a big run in the midseason that's going to make people be like, oh, the Bucks are back. But as for right now, they're not hitting on the same cylinders they was for me before. Yeah. But, so yeah, the Nets lost to the Cavs, 135-147.
Now I can speak about Kyrie's defense.
Hold on. Before you get into it, I just want to say that this game didn't expose any problems or weaknesses about the Nets that we didn't already know coming into the game. Like, yes, they have no depth. Their defense is downright almost horrific, and they definitely need a backup center extremely bad.
Nope. You can't even just say that. Their bench shot 4 for 24. You didn't know that 16%.
I mean, their big three combined for 96 of their 135. And yet, none of them was the game high scorer.
Okay, but you realize that the starters shot 53.6% compared to the bench shot 16%.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the Nets have no... They're six deep, bro. They're six deep.
The bench shot 18% from three. 18. Like, it's not good.
I mean, that's what happens when you leverage your depth in the way that they did for a star in James Harden. Like I said before.
They played one bench player more than 12 minutes.
And it was Joe Harris, who's basically their starter. Like,
I was going to ask you, do you think they stick with the lineup they ran tonight? Or should Joe Harris join the starters and Jeff Green come off the bench?
Their primary lineup tonight was basically Kyrie, Harden, Joe Harris, Jeff Green, KD at the five. That's basically what they were running for most of the night. Because DeAndre Jordan, like, he just has no place on the court for multiple reasons. You know, like,
which is sad because the Cavs were running Jared Allen.
Yeah. And Jared Allen was hitting mid-range jumpers.
Jared Allen. Jordan's been going at him since last season. Can he not handle him?
Bro, Jared Allen was hitting mid-range jumpers, and DeAndre Jordan didn't know what to do. Like, I'm like, yo, bro, guard this man. Why are you out here? If you can't guard a big, like a big that doesn't shoot, a big that's not bringing you out to the perimeter, why are you on the court if you can't guard him? Like, at some point, you being able to catch a lob every 10,000 possessions isn't going to do much for us. Like, it's just not. And so,
Torian Prince and Jared Allen did their thing and were a huge reason that the Cavs won this game, too.
Nah, Torian Prince went on like an 8-0 run. At one point, him and KD were going back and forth. I'm like, yo, what is going on right now? Him and KD, Kevin Durant and Torian Prince literally going back and forth like Dion Waiters and who did he go? Tim Hardaway Jr. in that Rising Stars game, bro. Like that was crazy.
So Jared Allen wound up closing the game and playing 31 minutes with a double-double while Drummond played just 26 minutes and had 13 and 7 with 4 turnovers. I've been saying Drummond can be moved since the trade happened because Allen is going to be their center going forward in the future. Do you think that they should move Drummond after what you saw?
I do. I think Nets fans were asking for Jared Allen to finish games for a very long time and weren't getting what they wanted, and the Cavs were like, no problem. Let's see what you got, big dog. Clearly proved that he was able to do it. Played 31 minutes, 11 rebounds, 12 points, double-double, 4 blocks, which was a game high. Well, KD also had 4 blocks, so I guess a tied game high. Like, I definitely think that Andre Drummond is well on his way out of Cleveland. He'll definitely be moved by the deadline. And I don't think it's even going to be in a big move. Like, I don't think it's going to take much for a team to get Andre Drummond off the Cavs. They clearly have their center of the future. They're damn close to their team of the future with Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Isaac Okoro, Larry Nance Jr., and Jared Allen. That's probably their starting five for the foreseeable future. So yeah, get Andre Drummond up out of there. And wait, just to also say, the Nets lost to the Cavs without Darius Garland. Like, they weren't even at full strength. Not to mention, they are the lowest scoring team in the league. They average the 30th amount of points in the entire league. Like the least amount of points in the league. And they, without Darius Garland, still lost. That's just insane. Yeah.
The Cavs, 7 of their 8 players who played had double figures. And the one who didn't had 8 points and fouled out. So they would have had a full roster of double figures had Okoro not fouled out.
Just a shout.
And then the Nets had 2 zeros on their bench. And no one on their bench had more than 6. So that's the glaring difference, obviously, but it's something we already knew. Now, talking about the big three, right?
Yeah.
Kyrie comes in.
Comes in and played spectacularly, by the way.
Immediately, yes, he played well on the offensive end of the floor.
37 points, 4 rebounds. No, not 4 rebounds. Ha-ha.
2 rebounds,
3 assists.
Blocks, 3 blocks, random. Don't think it'll happen again.
Took the most shots on the team, by the way. He was 15 of 28 in 48 minutes.
So he came in, took the most shots, took almost every shot in double overtime. Couldn't buy a bucket at the end, which just shows how well he played until the second overtime. But the defense is going to be a glaring issue there. And there's nowhere to hide because Harden isn't much better. Now, I will say Harden is a better defender. So out of the two guards, Harden's probably going to have to guard the better one. But in this one, they stuck with Kyrie guarding Sexton, who then owned him in the second overtime. When, although it wasn't just him,
literally Sexton went nuclear.
He had a 15-0 run by himself that featured the 3 in Kyrie's face to send it to a double overtime. then another three in, I believe, Jeff Green's face, then another three in Kyrie's face, then another three in KD's face, then another
three. Bro, do you remember that game in college where he was playing like 3-on-5?
Yes, that's what
that's what it reminded me of, bro.
He was doing everything and led them to a win when no one thought it was possible.
Yeah, the Cavs Twitter themselves tweeted like, we were supposed to get blown out by 200 points. And like, you can't even blame them. Talk your shit. Like, of course, because everyone, even I tweeted out from the Hoopball Nest Twitter, like, yeah, the poor Cavs are about to get ran off the court tonight. Ended up running us the F off the court. Just to break it down, Colin Sexton had 42 points, 16 of 29 from the field. Which was a game high. Also, the fact that he was the best player on the court with three of the NBA's top 10 players also on that same court is crazy. He outscored. Okay. Wait, what happened?
Three of the NBA's top 15, two of the NBA's top 7.
Okay, fine, whatever. Three of the NBA's top 15 players. He was still found a way to be their best player. He outscored three of the NBA's maybe top 10, top 15 scorers. Like, Colin Sexton was on a different level tonight. And once again, we just need to go over the Nets' defense. Like, so I looked into it. They have, in the Harden era, since he's joined the team, that three games, they have yet to hold a team below or at their average amount of points. So how many points did the Magic score, Hunter?
115.
The Magic are the third lowest scoring team in the league. They average 104.5 points. And how much did they score?
115.
So, one to the Magic. So then we get to the Bucks. The Bucks are actually the second highest scoring team in the league. They
score more than the Nets, typically.
They score more than the Nets. The highest scoring team in the league is the Wizards, which is crazy, but they score 120.5, the Bucks score 120.4, and somehow the Nets still let the Bucks get above their average. And then obviously this is
shattered their average by 47.5 points.
This is just sad because, like I said,
overtime periods are 5 minutes. There was two of them. In the 10 minutes between the two overtimes, the Cavs scored 34 points.
Like I said before, the Cavs are the lowest scoring team in the entire NBA. They're the only team in the NBA that doesn't average at least 100 points. They average 99.5, and somehow the Nets, without the Cavs, without Darius Garland, without their second best player, the Nets let them score 147 points. In the three games since Harden has been a Net, the Nets are giving up 128.3 points, which is the second most in the entire league. If that doesn't spell defensive issues, I don't know what does. Like, that's very clearly going to be a problem. For top tier teams like the Lakers, who, like I said, like to hunt matchups, it's going to be tough for them to guard them. If the Nets are going to win the chip this year, they need to figure things out on the defensive end first.
Who is guarding Anthony Davis?
Who's guarding LeBron, bro?
Well, KD will stick LeBron. He is shadow LeBron. And they'll go out.
Who's guarding Dennis Schroeder?
That's the thing. I mean, Kyrie can hold his own on Schroeder.
Can he? Because Colin Sexton just had 40.
Sexton is quite miles better than Dennis Schroeder.
Bro, but Dennis Schroeder can get a bucket. Like, come on now.
Yes, but he's not the same as Sexton. It doesn't matter. But then you have the issue is Anthony Davis, because if they're going to think DeAndre Jordan or Jeff Green can guard him, tough.
I mean, yeah, it's going to be tough for the Nets. That's their number one issue. They're not going to be able to just outscore every team every single night.
That's why if they happen to run into the Sixers in the playoffs, Embiid will be a big issue. Because if the Nets run small, KD can't guard him.
No, I mean, nobody can guard him, so expecting that man to guard him just isn't fair.
Embiid is a large man. He can't be guarded by anyone. His own stamina is what holds him back half the time.
No, Steve Nash has got his work cut out for him. On the offensive end, things could have been better, you know. James Harden definitely took the back seat. I think he only took 14 shots tonight. Let me make sure. Yeah, he was 6 of 14 in 51 minutes. He had another triple-double. He had 21, 10, and 12. But, you know, things just didn't work out. He was the guy that, like I said, took the back seat. And I think there still needs to be some balance in the shot attempts. Kyrie taking 28. Let's take three less, let Harden take three more, kind of balance things out a little, like things like that will come with time. Looking forward.
And after this game, so Kendrick took to Twitter and said a lot of crazy
that
takes.
The Nets have to play Kyrie Irving as if he's the sixth man.
I mean,
he believes that Nash should start Kyrie, pull him early, and then run him out with the second unit. The issue there, not only is that a horrible idea on its own, the Nets don't have a second unit. There isn't a unit, there's a second player. So if you take him out for that one player, who's he gonna run with?
I couldn't tell you, bro. I truly couldn't.
There's no second unit. He's not running with the 5 minutes that Reggie Perry gets and the 8 minutes TLC gets. So who's he running with? That's the problem. Perkins doesn't watch the games, looks at the box score and sees, oh, wow, Kyrie took a lot of shots, I don't like that, and then goes to Twitter. Like, that's a horrible idea. Kyrie playing off the ball worked just fine. It's just that his shot selection was not the best, and it hasn't been for years. Kyrie just takes bad shots. That's what he does. There's players who do that. He's one of them.
And like I said, like those James Harden step backs, man, when they go in, it's incredible. But when they don't, they sting. They sting.
Don't, they're ugly. They hit front rim, they hit deep on the back of the rim, they're not close when they miss.
And so, like I said, time will tell how the Nets figured out, and I think time will heal some of the wounds that the Nets have, but it won't heal all of them.
Did you happen to catch the DeAndre Jordan jumper that he attempted at the end of the shot clock?
Was it not an air ball?
Yeah, it was not going to hit the rim, so Seti Osman something caught it.
Like, you have no place to be doing that. I'm sorry.
Like even if there's 3 seconds on the clock, just throw it to the nearest star around you and let them fire. Or at least throw it at the rim as hard as you can and just hope that someone gets the rebound. Like, shooting a jumper with confidence is not going to cut it.
Throw it at the rim as hard as you can.
It's not going to cut it. Shoot it like it's a free throw at the end of a game where you need a rebound. Like,
so after this loss, we tweeted out some thoughts, takeaways. Doug responded. He said, damn, I miss Jared Allen. As a player, as a human, Harden is great, but we traded away our depth. It showed tonight. That needs to be addressed. They will learn to play together, but it won't matter if there's no bench. I 100% agree. I think I think Hunter also agrees.
So, the depth is going to be their downfall when they play a team like the Heat that will run fresh legs all game. The Heat are going to cycle out Dragic, Hero, Duncan, this, that, all these players.
Nunn, Jimmy, Bam, Kelly Olynyk.
They're 9 to 10 deep to net 6. And that's going to be a big problem when Jimmy's going to play a lot of minutes, and he doesn't typically get tired often unless he's hurt. But when Hero's fresh at the end of a game and Dragic's fresh while Kyrie's on minute 46, it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt bad. And then for them to have to move on past that series to face Philly in the next round if they make it, where one of them has to guard Ben Simmons – It's tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough. Sean Marks definitely has his work cut out.
Be careful with these free agent signings and make sure they hit with players that can fit in the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Marks has his work cut out for him. He needs to be very thoughtful, very cerebral about who he brings in. And looking forward in the Nets schedule, they play the Cavs again on Friday. So they will have a chance to...
Whoever they sign should be defensive-minded.
What'd you say? Your mic cut out.
Do you believe that their signing should be defensive-minded?
I do. I don't think he should be solely defensive with no sort of offense, but I think that if you have to prioritize a player that's better on offense than they are defense, or better at defense than they are offense, I'm going with the defensive-minded player, just because, like, at the end of the day, you're probably going to have three of the five best players on the court at all times. So, you know, I would rather prioritize defense, yeah.
Look, I'm not going to lie. There's a free agent out there who, yes, he didn't play for a long time and could not be 100%, but if he's anything like his old self, could benefit the Nets greatly.
Who are you talking about? Oh, yeah. Didn't we talk about him last time?
Now he cannot score the ball ever.
Can't shoot a lick worth a
guard. Somebody put him in the game and let the other three work around him.
Yeah, no.
And if they help off of him, so be it. Let KD take a double team and score. But he can change the defense if he's anything like his old self. Now, obviously, he'll have to work out and they'll have to see that, because the injury was pretty bad, so he could not nearly be as good. But if he is, he could be someone that helps them out.
No, I agree, and I think Sean Marks should definitely take a look into Roberson and see what his conditioning's like, see what point he's at, and if he's ready, if he's game ready right now. But yeah, like I said, looking at the Nets schedule, they play the Cavs on Friday, so the Cavs will have their chance to do it again, and the Nets will have their chance at redemption. After that, they play a doubleheader versus the Heat on Saturday and Monday, so that should be a really, really good set of games. And then they're looking at the Hawks next Wednesday, the Thunder next Friday, and then the Wizards next Sunday. So there's four really good games in there, a lot. All six of those games could be really good, depending on if the Cavs can do what they did again today. The Wizards are the highest scoring team in the league, and the Nets just gave up a crap ton of points to the lowest scoring team in the league, so that should be a recipe for disaster. But we'll see.
That's usually not how things work, so I'd say the Nets win that one.
They probably will beat the Wizards. On
Twitter, all over the place. Everyone's saying, let's trade Kyrie for Westbrook to reunite Westbrook, Harden, and KD again.
Yeah, that would never. Please don't. Sean Marks, if you're listening, please don't do that.
Reports, and it's like them getting mad.
Yeah, no, that's not. No. Harden has come full circle back with KD, and that's where we need to leave it. And yeah. That'll do it for this episode of the Hoopball Nets podcast. We hope you guys enjoyed. Subscribe to the Hoopball Nets podcast on Apple Podcasts. Leave a 5-star rating and review, because all reviews will get read on the pod. You can follow us on Spotify as well. Make sure you download the episode. And you can follow us on Twitter at Hoopball Nets. Help us get to 200 followers. You can follow me on Twitter. A lot of following going on. You can follow me on Twitter at NajiAdams_Hunter. Is at Hunter_JKR on Twitter. And yeah, before we get up out of here, your letter is G.
Wow, G. G.
I already have one.
George Gervin, Iceman.
Mine's just Gary Harris. And with that, we will talk to you guys later.
This has been a Hoopball presentation.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.